Welcome to Hotter Than Ever, where we uncover the unconscious rules we've been following, we break those rules, and we find a new path to being freer, happier, sexier, more connected, and more self-expressed. I'm your host, Erin Keating. Today, I talk to Anne Choquette, CEO, author, and former editor of 17 and Cosmo Girl magazines, about the loneliness epidemic for women at work. Her research says that 80% of women in white-collar jobs say that they have felt lonely because of their job. She has found that so many women have a feeling that they don't belong and they're not able to be themselves in their workplaces, and that the more successful we get, the lonelier we feel, which is not the same for men. I mean, that is such a testament to the fact that these structures are not built by us for us, right? Well, Anne is setting out to change that. She is the founder of a networking group that I am part of called The List, and she's really amazing at building community and connection with other women. She's got some really practical, hands-on advice for how we can all intentionally build our networks and feel less alone in our professional lives. Let's get started. Harder than ever. Harder, harder, harder than ever. Welcome to Hotter Than Ever, Anne.
I'm so excited to be here. Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. You have had an amazing career, and now you run this thriving community of accomplished women, and I am on this list, and I see the dialogue, and I see the conversations, and the mutual support, encouragement, and networking, resource sharing that happens every single day as part of this community. And I wanted to have you on Hotter Than Ever to talk about your career journey, which is super inspiring, and also get into the new work that you've been doing about the loneliness epidemic for women at work, which some of us may have sensed, but did not really have any language for. It may not be everyone's experience, but I think the higher up you get in the hierarchy of corporate life, the more alone women are. And so I just want to start from square one. Like, how did you build your career to get to a place where now you're sort of reflecting in this macro sense?
So thank you, first of all, for even queuing up this conversation, because it is hard to make room to talk about women's power and ambition, particularly into the next phase of your career. It's sort of easier to talk about when you're young and hungry and ambitious and hustling. And yet, I'm still young and hungry and ambitious and hustling.
Me too, girl.
And so, right. And so, even as you're talking about the things I've accomplished, what I'm thinking about is like, what's next? Where are we going? What are we doing?
And I love it.
Absolutely. Like, I am learning so much about ambition and hunger from the next generation, but man, oh man, do I have something to teach about like stepping fully into your power and flexing a career's worth of opportunity and access and bringing it to bear for a group of women. That is where I am. I have really devoted my career to helping women step into their power personally and professionally. And this next phase of my career as CEO of The List, as owner of The List, as an entrepreneur, in really trying to focus the conversation about ambition and power and success for women to get people to pay attention. And that's where I am focused now.
I mean, Anne, even when you say the words ambition, power, and success, I think a lot of women go, I don't know how to own that. Right? Like, I might feel that, but I have not known a lot of women, even very successful women, even a lot of women that I've interviewed on this podcast, who are willing or able to own their own, the language around their success, who are even willing to claim their accomplishments in a direct way. Like, it is really hard for women to do that.
It's a new idea. Honestly, when I was editor-in-chief of 17, we did not use the word feminist until 2014.
That's right. It was out of vogue.
Mm-hmm. It was right. We were not talking about that. And even then, it was the article, I think, was called like, "Are you a feminist? Yes or no?" Like, it was a question mark. And then when I was promoting my book, The Big Life, which was sort of the next generation, it was a guidebook for millennial women to help them step into the next phase of their life. I was in conversation with so many amazing pioneering women. And I'll never forget when Diane von Furstenberg, when I was telling her about the ambition of the next generation of women, she said, yeah, I don't know. I feel weird about that word ambition. But that, you know what? That's okay, because we're just going to normalize it. There's nothing, it's not a word that means anything except for wanting what you want. And everybody deserves to want what they want and to go and figure out how to get it. So we have to take the judgment out of ambition, success, power, and influence. Frankly, hold up, I want to back up. We have to redefine what those words even mean. Because when we think about power, like this old idea of top-down hierarchical
power over,
door closed, that power is like finite and scarce, right? Instead of this new idea of power, which I am working so hard to bring into the forefront, which is power together, collaboration, yes, transparency, yes, diversity, right? To have greater connection and community, to be seen as powerful instead of scarcity, hierarchy. That's what the business that I launched into the next phase of my life is called New Power Media, because mm-hmm. I want to redefine what power looks like. The community that we have at The List is part of that new power. We are profoundly collaborative.
Yes.
Our connections run deep. We are a diverse community, diverse in race, diverse in age, diverse in industry, diverse in experience. Like, and all of that put together helps make us stronger and smarter.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I don't think we are educated to think about power as women. I think that for me, like, you know, as a creative executive, which is the career that I had in television, I was always like, no, just leave me alone in my little corner, like protect me from politics. I had bosses who I would be like, let me just do my thing. And I don't want to play power games, and I don't want to play politics, and I don't want to have to waste my energy on that stuff. But then it also kept me from claiming, like, actually, I do have some agency here. Actually, I am quite successful. And I think I was just afraid of all of that because it felt too corporate and it felt yucky to me and hierarchical. And I'm like fundamentally an artist at heart. And so I was like, that's not a game I play. I don't know. I don't get it. But then I worked with women who were more expressly interested in that and really owned their own ambition. And I watched them hit walls after claiming that. So how do we define power if it's not power over?
Oh, wow. So the first step is to be able to have control over your own domain, your own work, your own life, your own money. From there, you're able to grow. How can you bring other people into your power influence? I really think that this idea of community and connection, that's where power lies. To be able to say, I have enough power for you. And when I bring you in, that makes our power greater together. Rather than see power as this tiny pie that gets, when I take a piece, I'm taking some of yours. That's not new power. That's like old.
Right.
Power.
I think that's a conventional notion of power. There's not enough to go around. And so I'm going to get mine. I'm going to stick my elbows out and I'm going to keep you out. Right.
You know, and I came up in the world that way.
Yeah.
I came up in the magazine industry where it was the age of like, never let them see you sweat. We were not bringing our whole selves to work. I described it as the Ann Choquette show. I would walk into a meeting and I was like, everything is great. Look at these amazing numbers. Look at all these celebrities that we've got bought in. Woo. Don't look over here where everybody's burnt out and sad. Just look over here. And it was this amazing, everything is fine show that I would put on. And it didn't even occur to me in those years that it would have been okay to say, I am completely overwhelmed. I do not have the support I need. You don't have the support I need. Your structure isn't built to help me succeed? And why are we competing with each other when we should be collaborating to help each other rise? It didn't even occur to me.
No. No, because I think that's the old paradigm. And that's also, this is the progress of feminism, right? Like it's, you know, we started out with no agency at all. And then we're allowed to get educated and we're allowed to enter the workplace. And then we have risen through the workplace playing in a man's world by men's rules that they established for themselves when it was exclusively theirs. And now we're asking the questions of like, how do we actually feel comfortable in this world? How do we actually invent structures where we feel empowered to be our best selves and our full selves, which is fucking complicated when you're a woman. We are so complicated.
Yeah, women are fucking complicated.
Yeah.
You know, I learned so much from millennial women about the importance of community and connection and that mentorship doesn't have to be top down and like, I'm asking you, please give me the crumbs of your knowledge.
Right.
That it can be collaborative and peer-to-peer and communal. And it really was my work in focusing on millennials and helping them step into their power that made me realize how to step into my own power and what was missing. I want to talk about, when you talk about women in power, I want to talk about one of the tremendous barriers that is facing women from rising into positions of greater power and influence. And we can put aside the idea of like, does that feel ick? Because I want it for every woman. Mm-hmm. You don't have to want it for yourself. I want it enough for you. I want everybody.
It for you too. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll tell you a story. Can I tell you a story?
I love a story.
About 2 years ago, I'm reading the New York Times. And it's an article about loneliness. And we were post-pandemic. We were back to work. We were all feeling some joy. And there was an article that said the loneliness epidemic in the United States was on par with the opioid crisis. Dr. Vivek Murthy, our U.S. Surgeon General, was quoted in this article.
Okay, wait, Anne, let's just say that again. Let's just say that again.
The loneliness epidemic in the United States is on par with the opioid crisis.
Oh, that is a very bold statement. That is a profound statement.
It's hard to imagine, right?
Yeah.
That the physical harm, the mental harm, the loss of life that the opioid crisis has created in the United States,
the pain,
is the equivalent of loneliness. And in fact, when I first read that, I thought, I'm not lonely. I'm like surrounded by women all the time. We're in community with each other. I'm literally never alone because I have two young kids.
Me too.
I'm literally never alone. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this isn't right. But the more I read about the ways in which loneliness shows up, isolation, overwhelm, I realized I could see that, one, I could see it in our community, right? Mm-hmm. I could see the ways in which women were coming to our community with deeply vulnerable questions, not just nuts and bolts of being a successful woman. Who are you recommending as a publicist? Who's your videographer? How do I hire someone for this role?
Does anyone know someone at this place so I can connect? Right.
That all happens.
Yeah.
But the meat of the conversation is my relationship with my co-founder is falling apart. The relationship I have with my partner is falling apart. Does anybody have any experience with this? With a toxic workplace like the one that I am dealing with? How do I deal with a toxic client? Like these complicated questions that only show up when you are an ambitious woman, because the world is not built for us. The world is not built for high impact, ambitious women to succeed. And so who are you going to ask these questions to? That's the loneliness showing up in the world. The good news is we have the list.
Right.
And frankly, like now I am on a mission to make sure that everybody can build their own community, their own list in their own life.
I love that. I love that. I think a lot about my last corporate job, and there was a man running the larger team. And then there was a woman who was my direct boss, who was such an incredible model of how to be a leader. And all of us were very hardworking, very driven, very accomplished, almost to the point of masochism. Like, you know, we were all striving to win. And she was too, but she, I watched her over the time that we were working together decide that she could show up as a full human being.
Oh, wow.
And then start to model that for us and share her vulnerability and share her real life. And she ended up being able to do that in like larger contexts in the company overall. And it was so inspiring because what I thought in the beginning of my career was you get an assignment, you go into your office, you do all your work like a good girl, like you're writing a paper in college, and then you come out and you hand it to the powers that be and you go, what do you think? This, you know. And I had a first boss in early on, a female boss, who basically would say, don't do that. Just come in my office and we'll talk about it. And she would type while we talked. And I was like, wait, you can do that? You can just kind of like talk and work it out together. Like I don't have to prove to you that I can do it all on my own. And that was so freeing and liberating for me because I'm a person who is like, I've got this. I'm on my own. I'm a one-woman show. You know, I'm a one-person band. And like collaboration, it was a thing I had to really learn over time. And it was my female bosses who taught me to do that.
When you said that she showed her vulnerability and that you could do it together, I felt this huge body sigh. It's permission to exhale.
Yes.
To realize that there are other people on your team. That is the moment of connection. That is the spark of life that right there.
100%. And then we would do anything for each other because right. We were allowing each other the space to be three-dimensional, trusting that each other was super ambitious and hardworking and driving and would get it done, and that we could trust each other. And that if we did that, we'd be even better than we were alone. And
I love it. I'm getting
absolutely
chills.
Extraordinary experience. And I think pretty rare in the corporate world, but hopefully less so these days.
You know, it turns out not less so, unfortunately. And it is still really rare. We did some research at the list that we are calling 10 Minutes to Togetherness. And the research was looking at the loneliness epidemic in the workplace for women. And it turns out that 80% of women in white collar careers are lonely because of their jobs. Underline, circle in black marker, because of their jobs. 80%.
So in the rest of their life, maybe they don't feel lonely, but they come to work, which is the place they spend all their time and where they invest all their hopes and dreams and ambition, and they feel like they're doing it alone.
41% of women said that being at work was the loneliest time of day.
That's like all day.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And lonely is a hard word, right?
Yes, it is. Let's parse that a little bit.
But it feels like overwhelm and lack of support. Mm-hmm. It feels like isolation. It feels like a lack of respect from your managers or from the people who report into you. And particularly for women of color, they feel this lack of trust and lack of respect much more acutely than white women. It feels like you're divorced from yourself. I heard an amazing woman tell me what it felt like at her last corporate job, where she literally felt like she was leaving her own life and her own body when she stepped into her office. And yet it was a great job. She was getting paid well. She was getting lots of perks, and she was getting to do what she'd always dreamed about doing. And yet she felt like she had to sacrifice her mental health and her sense of self in order to do this job. And so that idea, 80% of women are lonely because of their jobs, is actually what I am so focused on helping to solve. I want to solve it right now. I feel like I'm helping to solve it. So that's the bad news. I see your face with all sorts of tension.
Well, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. And that loneliness can be defined as the feeling that that you don't belong or an inability to be yourself in your workplace. 100%. I think a lot of us struggle with reconciling ourself with our career. You know, it took me probably 15 years to figure out how to be myself at work, how to be self-expressed and not hold everything so tightly and worry so much about following all the rules and doing things exactly right. And I would watch people around me being looser and being more free and more connected. And I was just like, I guess I'm too uptight for that. But I just didn't have the skills or the self-confidence that if I showed up as myself 100%, that would be okay in these environments.
And it's the saddest part is that you turned it on yourself. You thought there was something wrong with you rather than think that there was something wrong with the system.
Yeah, that's what we do.
So actually, that's a really important point, because as I'm thinking about how do we help solve this loneliness epidemic at work for women, I want to make sure that we're not saying this is something you can just hack your way out of. Five easy tricks to get yourself out of loneliness. Now, there are tricks and there are things you can do. However, this is also a responsibility for employers to create collaboration, to create opportunities to address the fullness of your life, to create moments of transparency so that it's not on you to be transparent so you feel like you're constantly having TMI, but so that your company is being transparent with you also about the ways in which your work affects the company, the ways in which you show up in the workplace, the ways in which they're going to show up for you. So I want to make sure that this, for every woman that's listening to this, that thought to themselves, oh my God, I feel that. And I thought there was something wrong with me. I want to just take a moment and say, there is nothing wrong with you. 80% of women are feeling this too. There is something broken in the system.
Yeah. Or by design, not designed for us. Right. So, I mean, you said in your research, you said 40% of women said they feel that their company does not help them succeed. And I would 100% agree with that. While my team and my direct boss could see my success and wanted me to succeed and was always making sure I was being rewarded for the work I was doing and the awards I was winning for the company and all of these different things, the company overall didn't have a path for me and didn't really seem to care. And maybe it's because it was moving too fast and it was the tech company and blah, blah, blah. But I also would argue that it was because I was not a dude and I was not able to navigate in the social corridors of the sort of male corporate tech bro universe in a way, in a language that they spoke in. 100%. So that they could not see the value that I provided and the unconventional thing that I was doing for this company that was giving them so much juice and so much to talk about on the earnings calls, you know, but it never accrued to me. It never accrued to me. And no one seemed to care, to be totally honest.
And I'm sure you looked up at the ranks above you and you thought, how am I ever going to crack that?
Oh, I thought, fuck that. I'm not doing that.
There's no room for me.
There's no room for me. That's not my game to play. I'll never make that kind of money. I'll never have that kind of whatever dick. Like, I'll never have a dick. Like, it's really largely what it felt like. And this is a company that's ostensibly progressive.
Part of what we're asking for now is a call to action for everyone to acknowledge it. I think for a long time, companies didn't need to pay attention to the ways in which they needed to change in order to get women and greater diversity into the more senior ranks. And it's 100% true. It is lonely at the top. It gets lonelier the higher you rise, and it's worse for women of color. And there is no accommodation. There's no realization from companies that they need to change. Mm-hmm. And so part of what we're doing, this new initiative we're launching, we're calling it 10 Minutes to Togetherness, is a call to action for everyone to take responsibility to tackle this loneliness epidemic that is as dangerous and damaging as the opioid crisis, and to to do what you can do within your workplace to help address 80% of women that are lonely because of their jobs.
That's so important. And look, I'm willing to be the change, right? Like, leaders go first. We have to step out in front. We have to say this is a problem. We have to say we have proposed solutions. I love that you're doing this. And I want to hear about how you think we can actually enact some of this. Because the statistics in your research, I mean, you also say 53% of early and mid-career women said that they turned down a promotion, declined a job, or stopped working altogether because of the negative impact on their personal life. And when you say personal life, that sounds so superficial in a way. But the fact is that we're talking about motherhood and we're talking about responsibilities for caregiving that largely land on women. And so it is not surprising to me that women make these choices. When I got pregnant with twins and I had twins, people said to me, oh, you're not going to want to go back to work. And I thought, you don't know me. I'm right. ambitious. I'm not going to be a different person altogether. Also, if I step out of the rat race, they're never going to let me back in. So I worked for 20 years to get to this place. I just happened to wait a really long time to get pregnant. But I watched my peers turn down those promotions, scale back, accommodate. Be the person in their domestic life who accommodated and who stepped off the career path. And that's great if that's what you want. But if you feel forced into that and you feel like your company is sort of giving you this zero sum option, you kind of feel pushed up against a wall and like you don't really have a choice when you want to have a balanced life and you don't only want to be a career person.
So let's talk about what individual women can do Please. To build this network that they need to succeed. And what I am proposing here is not going to solve the entire pipeline problem that we are talking about, but the goal is to give you the support you need to continue to move forward, right? To continue to do what you want to do, to continue to feed your ambition. So it turns out we did in our research, we were able to identify the people who are less likely to be lonely and more likely to feel connected in their work. And we're calling them the community cultivators. They're only 1 in 3 people in the workplace are the community cultivators, and they're doing the work for 100% of the workplace. So you either need to be a community cultivator or you need to know a community cultivator.
There are a few, right.
But the good news is that they are not going to the bar, playing golf, going on corporate retreats, going on work trips. These are tiny little, what we're calling micro habits that you can cultivate in your own life just to build your network. And so it's a check-in call. I do this all the time. I will pull out my phone 4:00 in the afternoon and text someone who's been on my mind and let them know, hey, your name came up at X, Y, and Z meeting last week. I've been thinking about you. Sounds great what you're working on. Can I help? Is there anything I can do to help? And so it's a check-in with a personal connection followed by some substantive offer.
An offer is so gorgeous. Who gets an offer out of nowhere?
It's so important. It's the most important piece. I'll tell you what the biggest crime in networking connection is. If somebody says, oh my God, do you know so-and-so? And you say, oh no, I don't know her. And they say, oh my God, you have to know her. And then they go on and don't offer to connect you. Oof. It is like scratch you right off my list if that happens. If I say to you, hey, do you know so-and-so? My next question is going to be, can I connect you? That is the game that we are playing here. So the check-in starts with checking in human to human. Yeah. And saying, I see you, I'm thinking of you, how can I help? And it's so simple. It could be LinkedIn, it could be a text message, it could be an email, but I have some friends that call me for those check-ins, and I always love a phone call.
A phone call in this day and age is so disarming. I mean, I'm this is in the dating world too. It's like, I'm always like, let's get on the phone. And they're like, what? Yep. I'm like, no, like, let's be human beings together. Let's connect, because it's the second best thing to being in person.
Well, so that's the other trick of these cultivators, is the in-person. And so literally they will walk around the office and do their check-ins in person, or spend coffee time, or book in lunch. And it's not, it doesn't have to be a whole to-do. It's just making some human connection.
I had a great boss who would say, walk with me. He would just grab me and he'd be on his way somewhere and he'd be like, walk with me. I'm going to get a coffee, or I'm going to meet so-and-so at such-and-such. Walk with me. We'll talk. And I would always be like, oh my God, I need that. I need a walkabout, you know, because that was the most productive and connected time that we would get together, and we didn't have to schedule it.
And I'm a big fan of the walkabout that you suggest, even during these remote work days, right? Mm-hmm. If people are working at home, you got to get out of the house for 20 minutes. Like, let's do a walk and talk. Let's make a meeting while we're getting our steps in. Mm-hmm. So it turns out that these cultivators are these tiny micro habits, and it's not, it really isn't magic. It's just a way of keeping your connections alive and meaningful. And so that you feel like in those moments when your head is in your hands, or you're faced with a huge, overwhelming challenge, you feel like there are people on your side who have your back, knowing that you have their back, and that you can tap into that support. Just to keep you going, right? To keep you moving forward. Not with any kind of transactional. It's not transactional. It's a web of support.
Yeah, it's amazing. This same boss in my last job would say, can I get your brain on this for a second? Can I get your brain on this? Can I just talk through this thing and see if this sounds right to you? Like, she just used me as a sounding board. And I just always loved, I felt honored to sit in that position of like, this is a person I really admire, but she's using our connection to strengthen whatever she's trying to accomplish. And I didn't feel burdened by that ever. I always felt like, oh, great, this is a way I can contribute to her because she contributes so much to me. And I love this. I mean, this is, I always feel like, oh, I need to do this like 24 hours a day, but you're saying 10 minutes a day.
10 minutes. So I'll tell you why it's 10 minutes.
Yeah.
My hero, our U.S. Surgeon General, Dr. Vivek Murthy, in his report that he put out last year on the loneliness epidemic, had this amazing graph that showed precipitous decline in the amount of time that we have spent together over the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And if all of us spent 10 minutes a day intentionally nurturing our communities and our connections, we would decrease that huge loneliness gap by 50%. Mm. 10 minutes a day is going to make such a huge impact. And listen, as I said, this is 10 minutes for the companies too. You have to set up meetings where there's opportunity for collaboration and transparency. The all hands meetings that people roll their eyes about.
Oh my God,
turns
so
out
much.
Those, but turns out they're actually the secret to success. They're the secret to building community, because you are intentionally building in an opportunity for transparency and collaboration and visibility.
If they're not a PR exercise.
Well, yes.
I mean, I often experience them as an internal PR exercise where I was being sold something. It might be cynical. But I, you know, in the ideal place with the ideal leadership team, that's not what's happening.
So you want to put, I want to put this idea of the ideal. I want to imagine that these amazing women are learning the like micro habits they need to nurture their communities, and that they're working for companies that really want to see them rise and that are creating opportunities for transparency. They're training the managers to nurture their employees up to the next level, that they're creating community and connection and purpose into their companies. All of these things matter, that they're seeing the whole employee, that they're imagining that they have lives and they need some yoga and meditation, and they also need some mental health services. All of this. I'm still in the idealistic phase.
Good.
We just announced it. I want to stay in this place of idealism for as long as we can, until we can get as many people in the room as possible who are like thinking, just to be thinking about how we create connection and tackle loneliness, because it turns out loneliness is the thing that's keeping women from rising. And I don't want to see that happen anymore.
Right. God, Anne, it's so important. And another thing that you talk about, the drivers of community for men versus women at work, and not everything is gendered, right? But in this instance, men thinking their opinions matter is the driver for them. And this is almost true in relationships, male-female relationships as well. Sometimes respect is the most important thing for men, by all the things that I've read. And feeling a sense of psychological safety with coworkers is the most important thing for women. And I mean, safety in so many ways cannot be underestimated for women, whether it's in professional relationships, in the workplace, or in interpersonal relationships. And I think that the like power structure that exists today doesn't even come to the world with a sense that women don't feel safe. Like, we as women, a lot of the time, are in protective defensive, am I safe? We're asking ourselves, is this safe for me? Is this safe for me? All the time. So if your workplace and your teammates and your boss and your managers are dedicated and vocal about wanting to create a place of psychological safety, imagine what that, if we're not holding ourselves so tightly to the like, am I vulnerable here? Am I safe here? Is this a safe place for me? If we're able to breathe all of that out and just show up as our fully expressed, talented, ambitious, creative selves, it's just amazing the degree to which I don't even think we're aware that we don't feel psychologically safe.
I love that you highlighted that stat from our research, because it is absolutely true. And one of the things that I really want to be careful about is that this is not men versus women. Men are equally as lonely at work and because of work as women.
And in general, I think worse in real life. We're better connectors. We're better community builders. We're better emotional support givers naturally with each other.
But the things that men and women need at work, because the workplace has been so traditionally catering to men. In fact, that stat about how loneliness gets worse as you rise into positions of greater and greater power is actually only true for women. That as men rise into positions of greater and greater power and influence, they feel less lonely and more supported in the workplace. And so that's actually really important for us to pay attention to, like to ask why. What is it about the way the system is set up that the top just isn't, it's not about performance, it's not about results, it's about the ways in which the power works in your company. If the women are saying, no thanks. Yeah, they're saying this isn't for me. This feels really lonely and isolating. But I think to your point about psychological safety versus respect, I think everybody wants respect.
Of course.
I think everybody wants psychological safety. The question is, are you focused on it? Are you focused on giving people what they want and what they need? And if not, why not? And why not now? Let's do it now. Now you know. We're here. We're telling you. Now is the time.
And is the why not, I mean, we don't want to assume that there's nefarious intent, right? I think there's just, I think people need to be educated now that there are so many women thriving in professional life, that things need to get realigned in a way to accommodate, to address, to handle the fact that like women need some different things in the workplace.
You know, I was such a champion of millennials, the ones who grew up with me at 17 and who read my book, The Big Life. And now that they are fully stepping into their power, they really have changed the way we work. And I'm looking at Gen Z and I'm thinking like, come on, Gen Z, let's bring some of that energy to the workplace. Yeah. Let's see if you want to come show up as your full self and you want us to talk about like emotionality and equality and diversity, like that is what that's the change we need. Yes. Let's do it.
Gen Z will bring that. I worked in a millennial workplace and millennials get a bad rap. I think millennials are extraordinary because they grew up expecting to be treated well. I'm a Gen Xer. I grew up expecting to be just, you know, treated however and having to fight in order to make my place in the world. And so you can yell at me and you can, you know, you can do whatever you want to do as a boss. Treat me however you want to treat me. And I'm not going to hold you to any standard. But the millennials will hold you to a standard. And they will hold corporations to account for equity in a way, because the young women were raised like the young men to expect career success and to be treated a certain way. And that's my experience. And I really watched the young male employees and young female employees look out for each other, share salary information, share promotion information, and to make sure, like, hey, you getting what I'm getting? Hey, you getting what I'm getting? And the powers that be did not fucking like that.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, when we... Now, I am also solidly Gen X. Mm-hmm. And when I got out of college, we were having a terrible recession.
Yep.
And nobody could get a job. And everybody was working. You had a Mick job. You remember the Mick jobs? Mm-hmm. You were working.
I couldn't even get a coffee shop job. I could in right. San Francisco when I graduated from college.
So people called us slackers, uh-huh. right? We couldn't get jobs. And so people just thought we were slackers. When millennials got out of college, we were also having a terrible yep. recession and there were no jobs for them. But instead, they were side hustling.
Yes.
And gigging and interning and doing startups with their companies. I could see this change happen actually when I was at 17. The year after the huge economic crash, instead of getting calls from young women who wanted dating or fashion, and by no way, I don't mean calls, I mean like emails. Yes.
Calls is a metaphor.
It wasn't the old age.
Yeah.
It wasn't the old age. But instead of asking for advice about fashion or dating or beauty, they would come to us and say, how do I get an internship? How do I get a job? Yeah. What do I have to do now so I get into a good college? What do I do now if my parents can't afford college, but I need to figure out how to get... And it like turned on their ambition and they had the tools to make the change. So that we are living in their world yep. that they created of hustle and drive. And like, come on, Gen Z, get in there. Like, I want to live in that world of equality and diversity that you have been dreaming about and mm-hmm. feel you deserve, because you deserve it. I deserve it. We yep. all deserve it.
Yep. I love it. I love it. I'm very hopeful about what these next generations are going to bring. And I also think Gen X women, we are only now stepping into our power.
Amen.
And we are only now stepping into our leadership abilities. And I think I love this thing about women, like you look at a job description and you think, it says I need 10 years of experience, but I only have 8, so I'm not going to apply. Like, I think we're finally at a place where our experience has caught up with our ambition.
Yes.
And now we're ready to rule. Like, now we're ready to run everything. I really feel that. And it's so exciting because we bring all the lessons of our own hard-won success and then all of the inspiration from the people who are younger than us. And now we have some tools, Anne, because of the work that you're doing, of how not to be lonely in this leadership and how to cultivate a change in organizations that we're in charge of.
I have felt so much power by gathering my Gen X friends, colleagues, coworkers in this moment, because we didn't have it when we were coming up. We really did not have community culture and connection. But to have it now, I feel the gravitas of the women who are Gen Xers. I feel the wisdom, I feel the strength, I feel the experience, and I also feel this drive to like, this is our moment. Mm-hmm. Let's fucking do it.
Mm-hmm. I'm so inspired.
Together.
We're fired up.
Let's do it together.
We are fired up. Okay, Anne, I'm going to ask you to give 5 practical tips for how women who are listening to this podcast can increase their connectedness and community and reduce their loneliness in their professional lives. And then I'm going to ask you one more question to round out this episode.
All right, let's do 5. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Check in. Send those check-in texts. Walk around the office. Use your commute to listen to podcasts or to make phone calls to people who make you feel stronger. Don't use that time for decompressing. Use it for getting deeper and stronger with your connections. Mm. Get centered with yourself. Meditate. Do that moment of quiet reflection, because if you have nothing to give other people, you have to deepen that relationship with yourself so you have something to deepen in the connection. And pay it forward to the people who are coming up behind you. That next generation are your allies, are your fuel, are your energy, and they want to learn from your wisdom, and you are modeling a new dynamic of power for them. And that is going to make you more powerful and more successful and more connected.
Mm, I love it. All super doable. Does not require superhuman strength.
It doesn't require heels or Spanx or bourbon or golf.
Thank God it doesn't include golf. That's amazing and very actionable. So I've asked everyone who's come on this podcast one question. And that question is, are there any deal terms in your own life that you are ready to renegotiate? Everything in our lives is a sort of set of agreements. And I think we act like those things are fixed. And I think they're open for renegotiation at any time.
In this next phase of my life, I am ready to renegotiate asking for permission. That's what I want to renegotiate. I want to do it. I want to bring together the people who see the world my way, and we're going to do it together. I am done trying to convince people about women's power and influence and opportunity and possibility. I'm going to just gather the people who see it, and we're going to stage the revolution.
Fucking A, Anne. I'm there. I'm there with you. I am there with you, and I'm here for it. And if there's any way I can help, I will reach out and offer.
You are in the revolution. Mm-hmm. Get in.
I'm in. No, I'm in. And this podcast is part of the revolution for sure. This is about, you know, letting us claim our own agency for our own happiness, whatever that looks like for you, whether that's in your corporate life or your personal life or in the bedroom, however it is that you are going to feel like the most expressed and powerful version of yourself. I want that for you. Anne wants that for you.
We should all be done asking for permission. Claim your agency. I love that.
Yeah. Gorgeous. Gorgeous. Thank you for this conversation and for lighting the fire and for holding the torch. And we will put information about your 10 Minutes to Togetherness community and program in the notes for this episode. And people can be on the lookout. I'll also put information about the list so that people can look for that and see if that might be a good fit for them. I found it to be a really valuable resource, and I'm grateful for you.
I'm grateful for you, and I'm grateful to be in community with you. It's a joy. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to Hotter Than Ever. Please reach out to us with questions that I will personally answer on the air in our weekly advice episodes. Did this conversation spark some questions you have about your own professional life and journey? Are you wrangling with some tricky stuff at work? I have probably been there, and I am here to give you my very biased and totally unqualified feedback. Just DM us on Instagram at HotterThanEverPod, or call and leave a voicemail, or text your question to the Hotter Than Ever Hottie hotline at 323-844-2303. I would love to answer your question in a future episode. Hotter Than Ever is produced by Erica Gerard and Podkit Productions. Our associate producer is Melody Carey. Music is by Chris Keating, with vocals by Isa Fernandez. I hope you're enjoying the spring and taking time to smell whatever flowers are growing near where you are. This is it, ladies. This is your one and only life. Blink and you miss it. So slow down if you need to, and take time to notice all the beautiful little things.